This episode is brought to you in part by OmniSend. Yes, that OmniSend. All right, Shopify friends. Are you ready to take your e-com game to the next level? Then you've got to check out OmniSend, the go-to tool for supercharging your Shopify store. With OmniSend, you'll be launching pre-built e-com automations in no time, segmenting customers based on their shopping behavior, and even trying out SMS or push notifications, all from the same powerful platform. And that's not all. Over 100,000 e-com brands trust OmniSend to drive sales and build stronger customer relationships. Whether you're sending quick-to-create, highly relevant emails, or targeted texts, OmniSend makes it easier than ever to connect with your audience and convert them into loyal customers. Don't miss out on transforming your Shopify store with OmniSend. Check out, we even have a link. It's in the show notes, your.omnisend.com/unofficial Shopify podcast. OmniSend. My friends, I am told that our guest today believes anyone can be successful in e-commerce. All right, bold claim, but there's a caveat there. He said, you can't. The four-hour work week days are over. You got to put in the work and potentially you got to build a team to make that happen. But with those two caveats, anyone could be successful in e-commerce who puts in that work and builds the team. But how do we do it? And so our guest, the man who told me this moments ago before we were recording, is Matthew Stafford, CEO and managing partner of Build, Grow, Scale. And we'll get into, we'll hear from him what Build, Grow, Scale is. I want to hear about that, his journey, and also conversion rate optimization. That is one of his specialties, and that's going to be our theme today. And so that's what we're going to be discussing, e-commerce success, what it takes, and conversion rate optimization. And Matthew Stafford's journey with Build, Grow, Scale. That's our topic for today on the unofficial Shopify podcast. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Jack Nasty.
Matthew Stafford, welcome. How you doing?
Welcome. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you. Okay, let's start with Build, Grow, Scale. Explain to us what Build, Grow, Scale is or what you do.
I had my own Shopify site, or I had sold during the t-shirt days, like on Teespring, and built a platform and sold an enormous amount of t-shirts, about 15 million of them. Whoa. into a faith-based niche and mother's audience. And from there, we sold that platform and I moved into Shopify and thought, okay, let's now do this on Shopify. And it started off right away. I was actually really good at Facebook ads and I was really good at targeting and we were in the kitchen niche. And so within a matter of a few weeks, we're doing several hundred sales a day and growing it. And I thought, wow, this is just going to be easy. And I started adding apps and doing more things and Facebook algorithm changes. And we went from doing 200-300 sales to 500-600 sales. And within about 6 months, we were selling 300-400 and breaking even some days and losing money some days and making money some days. And I was like, this just doesn't make any sense. When we first started, it was awesome. And I had a friend, and this is how much I knew about themes and developers and stuff back then, who was a developer, and he said, yeah, well, when I try to load your site, it takes 13 seconds. No wonder nobody's buying. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It loads fast. He goes, yeah, on your computer, because it's cached. But you load it on somewhere else, or if they don't have Wi-Fi, and it's horrendous. And so over the next 48 hours, he helped me, and we went through and made a bunch of changes, and we went from that 13 seconds to 1.6. And like that, like literally sales just took off again, and we were doing 1,000 sales a day. Started ordering our products from China, doing all this other stuff. And I happened to come across a friend of mine on Facebook that was teaching some Google Analytics, like, hey, look at the data on your website and use that to make better decisions. And so I spent $1,000, I think it was $1,000, and he would do like 6 or 7 calls with me over, you know, the next 6 or 7 weeks. Well, as he showed me the data and then I would go in and make changes each week, our store did better and better and better. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's something here using this data on the back end to really optimize the experience, because it was night and day. It took us from, you know, making $1,000 a day to $4,000 or $5,000 a day. And
what
really,
was this data? Like heat maps, screen recordings?
It was all the Google Analytics enhanced e-commerce metrics.
GA funnels.
Yeah, it really, really wasn't even close to the data that we collect now using Tag Manager and all the other stuff. But again, remember, this is 10 years ago. And so anything that you did to improve the experience back then had exponential results because you were the only one doing it. Like nobody else even had a clue that it was available to you. And so my other business partner at the time, he taught education. I really never taught education. I was more in the back end doing the work and creating the sales and running the traffic and doing that. And I remember everybody and their brother was teaching how to run Facebook ads. And I mean, I almost still think that's really what lots of people do, or now you just have an agency do it. But I said, traffic's not the problem. When I look at the data and people's stores are converting at 1.5-2%, 100 people clicked on an ad to come to the store and look at what you have to offer, and 98 people left. So the ad actually did its work. Traffic's not the problem. Why don't you try to convert 2 more of those people, of those 98 that left, and you would double your results with the same amount of traffic? And so then that kind of became my mission. And over the next 3-4 years, you know, we have stores that convert at 6-7% consistently, which is 3-4 times the average of, you know, e-commerce. And really the way that I had done it was I had studied a lot of marketing and Bill Glazer and Dan Kennedy and direct response. And I started looking at a Shopify site as like your homepage is top of funnel and your checkout is the end. And how do we get them to graduate through those steps? That's really how I got into it and how I discovered understanding that the conversion rate optimization or the CRO just makes everything else work better.
Given this experience, I like to know, what's the thing that drives you crazy that like everybody gets wrong? What's the big common misconception about conversion rate optimization for Shopify?
Actually, there's 3. Everybody thinks, oh, because I send them to my product page, that's where the entire experience of my store is, which is just not true. And most people's product pages raise more questions than answers. And I would say the other thing is, if they've done their own customer service for a certain amount of time, they think every single complaint or every single question needs to then be put in an answer on the site. And what happens is they force 100% of the visitors to go through the problems that 20% of them had. And they end up creating a journey that has no congruency, no ease and flow, and it actually generates more confusion than less.
All right, talk to me about that. The product detail page, in a attempt to optimize it, they end up creating a product detail page, which is like largely that's where our purchase decision is going to happen, whether or not they add to cart.
Yeah.
You said it generates more questions than answers.
Yes.
And that's potentially because they're every customer support inquiry, they go, well, clearly if they had to ask us, we should put that on the website, which does not seem outrageous, but it sounds like there's too much going on there.
Yeah. So I'll give you some interesting stats. If your site converts at let's just say 4%, which is good. That's better than 99.9% of the other stores out there. I can tell you that if your store converts at 4%, you can go look at the people that click on your filters, which would be on a category page, not a product page, are going to convert at probably close to 8 to 12%. And the people that use the search bar up above are going to convert at that much or higher and be worth twice the amount of revenue per visit. So all that said, to go back to the product page, why do those two areas of your site convert so much higher than the site average? And that's the question that we, you know, are always looking to answer. Or, you know, when we find a spot on the site that's high converting, how do we get that everywhere else? Well, my theory is, if you make something very easy for them to find, or if you make it easy to find what they're looking for, they are going to convert much higher. Most people are trying to guess at how do I make my product page convert higher and send everybody there, when that's not actually the question that I think they should be addressing. I think they should be addressing what's the easiest way for the customer to find what they're looking for, and then let them look at it from that standpoint. Because most store owners are looking at their site as, how do I make as many sales as possible? How do I show them everything that we have and all the stuff, instead of how do I make it super easy for them to find what they're looking for? When they find what they're looking for, they convert more than twice the site average. So it feels like when you look at the product page and you try to put everything there, that's actually hurting you. Otherwise, it would convert as high as those other two areas too.
So we're talking about navigation. The thing you have to nail is
navigation.
Site hierarchy, navigation. Okay, I agree with you, because what I have, my experience has been, even just like getting the main menu right in a moderately sized catalog is really hard, like way harder than one would think.
Yeah. So I always tell people, like, you have an 80-20 on your store. Everyone does, like, no matter what, 20% of your products make 80% of your sales. I consider those your money-making links. Success leaves clues. Those 20% should be extremely easy, if not their own link in the main menu. We call the main menu your money-making links. All the other stuff is searchable, available, other people purchased this or other people viewed this. All of that can be done later, but the goal is create a customer, not do all this other fancy stuff and upsells and things. Obviously, AOV matters, but there's certain very specific ways that we teach to do that. But yeah, create a customer. And the way that you do that is you help them find what they're looking for easier than anyone else. Like, most Shopify themes are built by developers to create an online store catalog, not a converting funnel. And so people think, oh, I offer these 1,000 SKUs. You need to see all 1,000 SKUs in order to make a decision. And if I show you more, then there's a better chance you'll buy. The truth of the matter is that creates cognitive load and confusion, and people actually buy less. So we've proven it, and it's amazing how many times I've had to argue with our clients when they have like 13 options or 13 colors. And I'm like, you should only have 3 or 4 max. And they're like, no way. Like, you know, we sold pink last week, and we sold blue, you know, a month ago. So people are buying those. I'm like, I understand. But when you go into Baskin Robbins and there's 32 flavors, how long does it take you to decide? Or if you go into McDonald's and you have chocolate or vanilla, like, you can decide like that. Well, what's happening is people go, oh, I like this pink. Oh, I like this shade of pink too. Oh, this other off red. I don't know which one. I'll just come back later.
Choice paralysis.
Yeah. So it's literally, there's too many choices and it creates a freeze, or I'll come back later. Well, now they just lost the sale and they got to pay to get it back. So there are, you know, their ROAS is way worse. So make a sale and then you got all kinds of people to market to. So when we pare down the offering, every single time the conversion goes up. Like I've literally never, ever, ever had it not go up, sometimes by hundreds of percent. And so it's crazy to me that people don't learn from that and understand that when I point it out, and then they even, and they look at the experience on another store, they'll go, oh yeah, that's true. But they just don't see it on their own because you develop banner blindness for your own site.
Yeah, they're within days, they're blind to like any issues on their own site. This episode is sponsored in part by Cleverific. Hey, ever wake up to customers canceling orders? Maybe they said, oh, I'm bad at math and I shouldn't shop when I'm high. This was a gift, but we broke up. You're taking too long. And why should the customer have to ask you to edit their order for them? What if they could do it themselves? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, you can empower your customers to make their own changes through a self-service portal, or let your team handle complex changes directly from the back end. Cleverific is designed to reduce customer support tickets, ship orders faster, and even reduce returns and lost packages. Don't just take our word for it. Peter Manning New York cut their order support queries by 99% with Cleverific, and they're not alone. Get this, exclusively for Unofficial Shopify podcast listeners, you can get 50% off Cleverific's Pro plan, now just $49 a month, giving you full access to everything their app has to offer. Just go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use the promo code KURT50 at checkout to claim your discount. Take control with Cleverific and watch your customer support tickets plummet, shipping speeds increase, and package returns decrease. For a brand owner, their own site, their ego is their personality, gets intertwined with it. And that's where you get into, you're like, well, you know, I've had these arguments that are baffling. Well, it's because you are removed from it. And so you're not emotionally invested. They're emotionally invested. Agnostic. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of ego there.
And I certainly, I've learned over the years to address that right when we very first start. I'm going to say, hey, listen, I just need to know, are you data driven or are you design driven? And I'm okay with either, but that's going to change, you know, the complexity of our relationship. If you're data driven, we're going to be a lot more excited to work on this because we want to win. I don't want to show you a bunch of data that you can change this, this, and this and get better conversions. You go, yeah, that's not on brand. We don't want to da da da. Okay, that's cool. If brand means you make less sales, to me, that's just like such a contradiction of the purpose of a store. It's hard for me to get excited about working on it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and especially since it feels not just subjective, but at times it could feel arbitrary where it's like, it has to work this way. Our example of that is sometimes internally we'll say, when going through site revisions, like the brand owner will describe everything as a bug. And certainly some things are bugs, but everything you don't like is not a bug.
Right.
What's like an unconventional on-site like design element pattern or something that just gets frequently pushed back on? I like the example of in less is more on our choices, fewer SKUs, fewer colors, whatever it may be. Any other examples like that where you're like, I know this to be true, but people really push back on it.
Yeah. So I call it the hierarchy of focus on a page. I believe that every page should have a most important action and it should be extremely clear exactly what that is. And then a secondary action and that's it. Not eight things that you can do. People try to their design element. Oh, the buttons all got to match the theme. Okay, well then that means they blend in, and your mind literally doesn't notice them as the next most important action. We know for a fact that when the button looks like a button, and it's the text on it on a button does matter. The color matters way less. But the hierarchy of focus is that the button doesn't match anything else on the page. Like it stands out like a sore thumb. That's the button. That's the action that I'm going to take if this is agreeable, like the product. And that always raises conversions. When you blend it in, it's crazy. People still can look at it and want to do it, but less of them take the action. So the hierarchy of focus and the text on the button is the thing that we get the most pushback. Buy now or add to cart on a homepage is literally the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Interesting.
None of those things are actually happening. So you're telling them when I click the button, I'm buying now, but I'm really not. I'm just adding it to my cart. And do I have enough information on a homepage to add a $80, $90, $200 item to my cart? So they're literally creating a conflict in the person's mind before they're on the page. And I believe that every page should kind of just like be this slope that you just automatically go to the next action, the next action, the next action. And we know that the less time someone's on your homepage, the higher they convert. What does that mean? Well, if they land on your homepage and they find what they're looking for quickly, they convert higher. If they're on there longer looking around, they actually convert less. So every single thing that we've always done that's worked at very, very high levels, we've taken stores from $300,000-$400,000 a month and had them at $2.5 million a month in 6 months. Like, and they would have been faster if they could have got inventory. So like, I love stores that work where they've done no optimization, because when you do that, then they just take off. But we like see more options, learn more stuff like that to get them to the next step. And then when you're on the product page, it would be add to cart. And then when you're in the cart, it wouldn't be buy now, it would be proceed to checkout.
Oh, my favorite.
Continue to shipping, etc. People don't want to click on something that they don't know where it's going to take them. And if you go buy now, they're like, oh, I'm going to give you money for this. I want to read the description. Well, it just like, it creates this pause in their mind, instead of like, they can just easily go through the whole thing without even realizing why they bought, because it's just seamless. And so we're always looking at how do we do that? And I'll give one more tip that like anybody that's listening to this can learn from our, in all reality, it's probably been, you know, with the volume that we've had, we probably lost $100 million worth of sales in that first several years by not doing this. We would look at the data, we would split test something, get a win, and then go look for something else to split test. Well, about 3-4 years into the process, one of our team members said, well, that winning element, like everybody doesn't read the page the same way. What if we put that element that just raised our conversions somewhere else on the same page in a different format or a different way? And so we did that and the page went up. And then we did it again and, you know, down in the description and the page went up. And we're like, wow. So we just got 3 wins in a row with the exact same win by just putting it more places on the page.
And you doubled down on what worked.
Yeah.
That's often, you know, my advice to people, but more like on a holistic level. It's like, all right, looking at your marketing spend, which one of these makes the most money, which, yeah, and then like drill down into that. Okay, double that and see what happens.
Cut this 50% that doesn't work. And
yeah. But you've taken that idea and applied this to the UI, to conversion rate optimization, where you're going like, we know that this button, this micro copy, this element works, was an improvement, a statistical improvement. Okay, let's keep it, but then let's also add that, you know, as a safety net throughout the page.
What's crazy, yeah, not every single person goes through the page the same way. Some people are picture related. Some people are read all the text. Some people like infographics. Some people, you know, and so when we started finding different ways to install it, the winning things on the page in multiple areas, and in many times we could put it in other places on the site where it would answer the same question. So a way that we found a lot of stuff is we would check scroll depth and watch the conversion rate based on scroll depth. Well, if all of a sudden you have a huge spike three quarters of the way down the page, like all of a sudden things are converting, we'd go, all right, let's go look at that page, see what things in there, and we'll use that as an idea to test, get that above the fold, because we know so many people don't scroll. You get that above the fold, the page does better.
I didn't know that you could correlate scroll depth and conversion rate.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I've been using Microsoft Clarity.
Yeah, we do use Clarity too. Yeah, we use Clarity too.
How do you get that to work in Clarity?
You'd have to ask my GA guy for sure. I can't tell you how to do that, but I know for a fact, like we know the scroll depth on every page and where it converts the best. Obviously, 9 times out of 10, you kind of want the page where if it's converting at, 15%, it kind of converts 15% all the way down, and then maybe a little more at the bottom, just because all the people that get to the bottom are the ones that read everything and then they buy. But yeah, like I can take you through our stores that we've been on the longest, and you'll see over time the page will convert very even instead of have these chunky different areas. And that is by paying attention to what elements are creating the wins.
That one's interesting. The other one I did not think of, at least in this way, was time on site and conversion rate are inversely correlated, because time on site going up tells you that they're lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus the lower time on site, like it is very streamlined and very obvious what to do next.
Yeah. And I think that that's more true on the ancillary pages in the beginning than it is your product page. So I would not say longer time on product page causes less conversion, where it does, like on the filter page and the homepage. What that typically means is exactly what you said, I think, because we have to guess at some point. I think it means they're confused. They're not finding what they're looking for, and they're frustrated.
That makes sense.
I can give you two more really good tips.
Please do. This is gold.
That will be ahas for your audience for sure. One, we put a survey on the thank you page. And I will tell you, out of our top 10 wins, this is probably where we got 6 or 7 of them. The survey question is, we ask everyone who bought, because it's on the thank you page, what was the one thing that almost made you not buy?
I'm writing this down right now because I will put this into action today.
These people who have just given you money and have their dopamine rush will answer that and tell you what was confusing or what they didn't understand or what was hard for them to figure out. And again, don't just take every single one and create it as gospel, but as you get those answers, start grouping them together, and you're going to find things on your site that you would never find and never see because you look at it all day, every day, and it will give you crazy good wins. Like we install it on every store that we partner with immediately. It's like literally what we do the first day, because we want those customers to start telling us what was difficult for them to understand or what almost made them not buy.
That's really good. Okay. That I wrote down because I'll put that into practice today and see, see what I can get out of it.
Yeah. You'll be shocked at the answers you get from these people. It's gold.
Okay. Key KPIs, key performance metrics indicators have come up a few times, and you talked about vital metrics like conversion rate, add to cart rate, and actionable metrics like bounce rate and time on site. Give me your approach on metrics. Maybe you've got some great thoughts here, like what people get wrong about it or how you differentiate between what's important and what's noise.
Yeah. So I can just give you a couple of rules of thumb that we've used as to find out where there's issues. So desktop and tablet will always convert twice as high as mobile. And if that's not the case on your site, then you know you have an issue in one or the other.
I know this one's true. I see it myself. I give the same advice because I mean, I can see it with my own eyes. Why do we think that is? Like I've got my theories, but what's yours?
Well, there's more real estate And so things can be laid out more. It's clear. You just have a lot more area to convey your message. And like I genuinely believe that the mobile experience should be different than the desktop experience. It should be the 80-20 of what creates the sales. The goal is to create a customer. If you have a good product and you nurture your customers to come back and buy again and again and again, like then really the first sale is just the start of the process. And so we care way more about creating customers in the beginning than we do anything else. And so, I would certainly focus on the 20% that creates 80% of sales and make the mobile the very best experience possible. You can get away with a lot more stuff and run tests on your desktop. We have several stores who have an older demographic and they don't like to buy stuff on their phone, and it's difficult for them to buy on the phone. And so we hit them on the phone, and when they don't buy, we retarget them back to desktop. And that works really, really well because they convert much higher there and it makes their retargeting a lot more profitable. So I definitely think, I think that's why, to answer your question.
The Unofficial Shopify Podcast is sponsored in part by Zipify, and they've got the ugly truth about direct-to-consumer sales to share with you. And spoiler, it's really ugly. 82% of the people who buy from your store once will never buy from you again, and there's nothing you could do to win them back. That's why you need to get as much revenue as you can from each order. And that's where One-Click Upsell comes in. One-Click Upsell is a Shopify app that offers your customer upsells and cross-sells with every purchase, and it can increase your average order value by 15%. With One-Click Upsell, you can add AI-powered upsell funnels to every product on your store in just three clicks, including your product pages, shopping cart, checkout, thank you page, and even on the Shop app, so you earn extra revenue automatically. One-Click Upsell is already the number one choice for 15,000 Shopify stores, and guess what? It's made merchants like you an extra $750 million. So don't miss out on another dollar in free upsell revenue. Try One-Click Upsell today and start making 10 to 15% more from every customer today. Go to zipify.com/Kurt to start your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. Well, I want to talk to you about tools, right? You're using Microsoft Clarity for heat map screen recording. I love Clarity, and it's free.
And Google Analytics, awesome. Of course. It meshes with Google Analytics amazingly. Wow. Like, goes straight in there, very clear. Yeah.
And then we've got, they've got that GA integration, which is nice. And then you're doing surveys, you're doing split testing. What are we using for those?
We use Lucky Orange for the surveys or whatever heat mapping survey process that the client already has. But we, you know, anything that you can get the survey to pop up on the thank you page. And yeah, we do that immediately. We also do, there's a couple other things. We have a post-purchase survey that we run that works really, really well too. First-time buyers, we bribe them with a gift card, not a coupon or a percentage off. And my theory behind that is if you give someone a gift card, they have money to spend. If you give them a discount, they have to spend money. And so the mentality is totally different. If you send someone a $25 gift card, they feel like they have money to spend. And what's crazy is we did that in the very beginning. We did it as a way to buy data. We wanted to ask surveys because it was a very complicated site, hundreds of options and different variants. And so we said, hey, we need $2,000 to buy some data. We want to give a $20 gift card. Their lowest price product is $25. They have $5 in hard cost to it. So we said, listen, we'll give you a $20 gift card. You'll have to spend $25, and then they get the cover. They get their cost covered. And so we said, listen, we need to buy at least 100 of these survey responses. And so we need $2,000. And they agreed to it. We started this post-purchase survey. And what we found is that the people that got the gift card would come back and buy again within the first 7 days. Almost 40% of them did. And so before they actually even got their initial shipment, they would buy again. And their average order value was around $90. So all their new, about 30 to 35% of their brand new buyers, because we only sent it to new buyers, because if it's someone who has already visited the site, they're going to have biases. And our questions were like, we asked them very specific things about the site. I think there's 7 questions in it. And over time, those people that got that gift card and bought twice in that first 7 days, now we've been tracking it over 6 years, their average lifetime value is 4 or 5 times their average lifetime value of the other customers on their site. So it creates this form of loyalty almost immediately. Hey, I answered these questions to help them improve their site. I like them, you know, and they gave me a gift card. I came back and bought again. Now I'm in the mode of buying from them, and those people are way more valuable. And what we realized was we weren't actually buying data because we were given a $20 gift card and their average order value is around $90. We were actually making money. And now the volume that they do every month, it's they make about an extra $10,000 to $12,000 a month off of the post-purchase survey question email that comes through. So we've never shut it off. Now we have literally a way to just tabulate those answers, and we create a graph, and that tells us where we're going to go work on the site. And so it's just become this profitable way to know exactly what to work on all the time because the customers are telling us.
Do you do, it hasn't come up, do you do anything with on-site personalization?
We do. I don't know. Like, I would be the wrong one to ask. I know that we've custom done it because our developers, like we have 7 or 8 developers that just work on Shopify only for years. And so most of the clients that we work with, where we do the dev work, you know, we have a contract with them. And so we just build things rather than use apps. A lot of times we'll use an app, test it and go, yep, that works. All right, cool. Let's build it into the theme and make it even better. And that's what we do. So I'm probably not a really good one to ask.
I like that approach. And I think you're right. Like, we don't do a ton with on-site personalization, but when I have done it, we just build it into the theme, similar to what you described, where, you know, based customers logged in. So now we know who they are and we know things about them, or we know what, you know, we know context, like what country they are, if they're B2B. And then, so based on that, like, they think the simplest approach is, if I know who they are, can I hide the things that are irrelevant to them?
And, yeah.
You know, that's often our approach there, but nothing like wild and crazy.
Yeah. So those are a couple of the really big wins that anyone can do. I'll give you one more I've literally in 10 years never seen it not make more money. And the reason for that is it's right where you transfer or where they make the sale. So on the information where you fill out the checkout, every single Shopify site I've ever seen says email, an address, and then phone. Well, you can change the language in those form fields. And we've tested it and literally tried, I would say, 50 or 60 variations. And have never been able to beat the variation that we have now, which is email required for order confirmation. And it came from, I was reading the book Persuasion, and it was basically like, people don't mind giving you information if they know why. When we were tracking the form fields, we noticed that there's just a lot of errors in the form fields. And so we wanted to try to reduce the number of errors. And when we put that text in there, number one most opened email that you'll ever send, highest percentage of open rate.
Thank you. Order confirmation.
Exactly. It's an 80, 83%. They don't put their junk email or their secondary email. They give you their best email. And so we actually realized our abandoned carts went up. The recovery went up when we got less form field errors in the email confirmation.
Oh, that's brilliant.
We said, okay, now we're going to figure out with phone because SMS is crazy good. And so we put phone required for shipping notification. You tell me anybody that doesn't want to know when their product shipped. And so by putting those in there, we've had as much as a 17% lift on the checkout, which is 100% found money. That's the point at which, you know, you're going to get them. They're going to click the button, you know, now complete purchase. And so getting that and then also having a better abandon and a better SMS recovery, that is probably one of the most valuable optimizations that anyone can do. And you don't have to be on Plus. You don't have to be on anything. You just go to the language settings of your checkout, change that in the form field. Those two optimizations will make you more money. 100%. I've never seen it not work.
But what I love about your advice is none of this has really been design centric. You know, it's like there's some, you know, practical design advice in there. But for the most part, it's like, hey, the devil's in the details and it's in the content. Like really, and a lot of what you've done here is like, what I've heard is nail the micro copy, the labels of buttons, the things I click to take actions. That's what makes the big difference. And then, hey, those things should look like buttons and they should be obvious and they should stand out. There's, when you distill it, it's like, hey, well, this seems like a lot of common sense advice. But then, you know, when you've been doing this for a decade, like we have, you realize like how much baggage comes along with making those changes. And so I think sometimes getting out of your own way and just going with the common sense approach that you're advocating is the path to more money.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is just the way my brain works is I was in the t-shirt business and it was like the next greatest, the next hot design, and that was just like, after a while, it just becomes grueling. Like it just is grueling. And I'm like, I don't want to have to worry about the latest, greatest. I want to understand how human behavior affects the way people interact with the site. And if my website ticks all the boxes and how people behave, I'm going to have a much, much better chance of converting than trying the latest thing. And so everything that I've shared is, in my opinion, it's principle-based, and principles last forever and always work. And if they don't, then the principle, you know, you've got it off a little bit. So the majority of the things that I'm sharing, we've taught them for years. And when people implement them, like they work and they still work now, just like they did a long time ago. To the point of like a lot of the things that we've taught over the years have now become pretty standard on themes, which was always like a really cool thing when all of a sudden we'd see it start showing up after we had been teaching it for a year or two and go, oh yeah, now the developers have seen it, or enough people have asked for it. And yeah, it's very, very cool. Like I totally agree with you that it seems like common sense, but it's only just because probably I think our approach to it is principle-based, not, you know, tricks and hacks.
Yeah, you're really advocating, without saying it, but you've been advocating against gimmicks. You know, there's a lot of like things, marketing tactics that work temporarily because they have novelty, where, you know, spin to win, that kind of thing.
And won a lot and then burnt people out on things. And so sites that look like that typically actually convert worse, not better.
Yep. If you could offer one piece of advice to someone, to a store owner, a brand owner, dealing early on with conversion rate optimization, what would it be?
It's probably the hardest thing for them to do, so maybe they could do it with a friend. But I would say write out two or three things that they would like to see someone do on their website, and then just ask them to do it and watch them. It's basically like user testing, which is always, we still have some of our biggest wins come through user testing. And that's where we propose a path and let someone who's never been on the site go through and do that. And we record the screen and their narrative with it. And then we can now see what they see based off of them going through it and trying to find stuff. So I would say, look at your website as a customer, not as the guy that owns the site trying to sell everybody whatever they want to buy. Like, how do I find what I'm looking for? Because the people that find what they're looking for convert 2, 3, 4 times higher than all the rest of the traffic on the site.
Goes back to like nail that, get that navigation right, get that main menu right. And I liked it so much, I wrote it down. Was when you said your main menu is your money making links.
Yeah.
Cause it's like a thing I hammer on, but just, you know, hearing a colleague or another professional, you come to the same conclusion separately. I was like, doesn't have to be super hard.
Even just another way to word it, because even the words that we use to describe it give us a new perspective.
Going back to the beginning, when we started this, you said, if you put in the work, I think anybody can make e-commerce work and successful. Now at the end, you're like, here's the straightforward tactics, strategies, approaches to reach that. Is there any other advice you want to include there? To wrap it up as to why you think like, hey, this is doable and reasonable given enough effort.
Man, I've never said this, but I think it's how I actually really feel at the moment. And I think it's based on my own personal experience. I've started getting coaching in other areas of my life, and it's amazing how fast things that I couldn't see, someone else can point out to me and I can make changes. And so I would say just find someone that you resonate with, that you get your information from, instead of trying to get it from 6 or 8 sources and being confused and you know, shiny object syndrome, which is really difficult to not do for most entrepreneurs. Find someone that you resonate with, get some advice or follow what they're doing. Actually do the work. Don't just scratch the itch by learning something new and then not doing it.
100%. It's always a good interview when I end it feeling inspired or like I took notes and I'm like, oh, I'm going to tell this to like these 3 clients. And like your survey question advice, I'm like, oh, I got several people. I'm going to run that past. I think that's a good one. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are still listening and going, where can I learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah, just go to buildgrowscale.com. Literally, you can get a hold of us there. You can go see what we do. Or you can email me, which is matt@buildgrowscale.com. It's that simple. I love helping people. I love working with people. So I don't try to be not accessible. I love what I do. So
Matthew Stafford, Build Grow Scale. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.